Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Now back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted this year's Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for hanging around. If you've already been here today, I appreciate that, too. 800-531-3815. Toll free, coast to coast. 800-531-3815. Peter Meyer is our guest. An old friend of ours, a longtime member of our Brain Trust, one of the top guys in our Brain Trust. He's the guy who helps us make sure that we're not fooling ourselves about the products and the services that we're taking to market, that we're taking them there to market the right way, and that we've got the right research behind us, and that we're doing the things that we should be doing. Peter is the principal in the Myers Group, which is a consulting firm that helps businesses create and dominate new markets, which is the title of one of his books and one of my favorite books, Creating and Dominating New Markets. Peter, welcome back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back here.
It's good to have you back, as always. Peter, you've been doing some research lately that you've offered to introduced for the first time ever on this show this morning on how to take a product or a service to the marketplace.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's a discussion, of course, when you create new markets, whether or not you bring the product out correctly. And the good news and bad news is that if you get it out correctly, then, of course, the market does well. But if you bring it out incorrectly, that leaves an opportunity for somebody else. And what we discovered is that in the search engine business, and I'm sure you use web search engines in your business, that there's a bit more opportunity than some of the search engine companies would like to think. What we did is we went out and we said to a whole bunch of people, a few hundred executives and business owners, people who are listening to the show today, as well as some folks who are individual contributors and a few federal and state employees, we surveyed several hundreds of these folks and said, tell us how your experience with search engine works, not in general, but about the last three searches you did. We want very specific information. And we discovered, if you want to sort of summarize the whole thing, that about 60% of the searches worked and 40% failed. Now, if you went on to the telephone information service and dialed 411 and it worked 6 out of 10 times, would that be good enough?
No, you wouldn't be happy with that. In fact, we'd want it to be 100%.
Yeah, you tend to be upset when the phone service only works 90% of the time, 98% of the time.
But we're giving the phone companies some pretty specific information that really has a right or wrong answer. Either they have a phone number or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
When we give search engines a request, you know, we may or may not do a good job.
Mm-hmm. And that certainly is a valid argument. And a number of the users point out that if they wanted to improve the quality of the search, they would improve the quality of the questions. But my point is not that we couldn't be better users. My point is that there's this gap between what people want and what they're getting that somebody's going to figure out how to fill.
Mm-hmm.
It's gaps like these that make new markets.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's where the niches are, isn't it?
A niche that could become very large. Google, for instance, is
exactly. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Please don't. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I was just going to say, the interesting thing is that some of these gaps that you're talking about are actually gaps that some companies know about, and they realize that when they plot they overlay their ability to service a market, they actually see these gaps. They know they're there, and they've actually chosen not to go there. In some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but whether they're trying to fill them and not doing a good job or not, or whether they've actually abandoned that sector, that segment, regardless, is still an opportunity, isn't it, for somebody?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there certainly are tools available on the web that are much more precise than Google is. Google, of course, is the number one search engine.
Right.
But you can take the other brands as well, AltaVista, whatever. There are tools that are much more precise that are available today. And the revenue from those tools tends to be fairly small. So Google is probably correct from their perspective in not going after that revenue at this time. It just isn't worth
it. Right.
However, the gap of that 40% is large enough that there's room for other companies to move in.
Mm-hmm. But how do we find I mean, isn't that kind of intimidating to try to go after that 40%? I mean, if somebody has already sort of abandoned it, it seems to me that for a lot of people it would be kind of an intimidating process to try to take that on.
Absolutely correct. It could be very intimidating. On the other hand, Texas Instruments used to dominate the hand calculator market. You may remember that calculators were about the size of a pocketbook and did basic functions. They would add, subtract. If you wanted to divide, that was a bit tough.
Right.
And TI controlled that marketplace. And their perspective was if they couldn't sell 100 million chips, I think that was the number, then they couldn't do very well. But other companies could do well with much smaller volumes.
Mm-hmm. Hold on to that thought, Peter. This is a very important point, folks, and we're going to talk about it right after these messages. 22, we'll be right back with our good friend Peter Meyer, the author of Creating and Dominating New Markets. We're back at 17 till. Let me remind you, in the show straight ahead, we're going to have Ron Peterson. He's going to talk to us about what do we do when the venture capitalists say no. How do we raise money when people start to keep turning us down? We're going to talk to him about that. And a new guest in on the show, a new person who will be with us, Leslie Fine, will be with us. And after that, and Leslie is going to talk to us about educating entrepreneurs. He's with the Fisher School of Business at Ohio State University, and we're going to continue our series on that we've been doing for a few weeks on how to educate and grow entrepreneurs. Looking forward to that. Then after Leslie, we're going to have Hal Urban, who's got a new book out, and we're going to talk about life's lessons and how that applies to small business owners. And then Norbert Michael is going to be with us. He is with the Heritage Foundation. We're going to talk about small business economics. That's coming up in the show straight ahead. Peter Meyer is our guest, and we're talking about how to take a product to the marketplace. And, Peter, you were giving us an example of search engines.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about this niche that you were mentioning.
Well, the question we were discussing is how big a niche do you actually need to have? And my point was that TI thought that calculators are barely big enough to be bothered with. Well, Hewlett-Packard thought they might be a better market than that, and Hewlett-Packard went after it. And now, of course, when you buy a calculator, you don't buy it from TI. Mm-hmm. They lost control of that market, and it's now gone to everybody else.
Tell us again why they lost it.
Well, they made the decision that they had to have massive volumes to make it worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And other companies could make the decision that they could get by with much smaller volumes and make a profit.
Right. What's the difference in perspectives?
The difference in perspective is that you can either let your factory run your business, or you can let the needs of your customers run your business.
Mm-hmm.
And discover the needs of your customers will often bring you profits that your factory would not normally lead to.
So you think TI went to their production people and said, okay, if I need to sell these things for a nickel, and how many would you have to make so I could make a profit at a nickel? And they told them 100 million. Mm-hmm. And instead of finding out that people might actually pay for them if you could give them a good product.
Absolutely the case. TI's perspective at that time was very much, we have this great technology, and let's let this technology define the market, and we'll design according to what the engineering specs say is the right thing to do.
But when you've got a brand new product like the little handheld calculators, for a little while, can't you sort of let that define the market?
Well, of course you can.
For a little while.
But, of course, as soon as you do that, the market starts to change.
Right.
You've got to keep in constant contact.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit easy to let the market definition sort of go the way it is. And if that happened with fax machines, none of us would have one. There would only be a few companies that have fax machines because they were $1,000 each when they started.
Right.
That was what the American companies did. Then some in Japan said, let's take a look at the more fundamental problem and find out whether or not we can solve the more fundamental problem for our customers and whether they'll pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
The answer was yes, and people started paying $300 for a fax machine, which, of course, are much cheaper now.
Right.
So the answer was, look at the customer's need, look at the problem you're trying to solve first, and then go look at the technology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, bring us back to the web search engines. What we find is that most of the folks who build web search engines, some of whom we work with, and build Internet infrastructure, many of whom we work with, look at it from an engineering point of view first, and then go look at it from a customer point of view. And the ones who are doing the best reverse that.
Right. Did Google do that?
Well, I won't talk about individual companies from that perspective. Google does a good job of what they want to do, and they're trying very hard to find ways to expand their business, to get into new markets. And their tendency has always been to produce the technology first, then see if anybody uses it.
Mm-hmm.
That's been their public statement. As to what they're doing beyond that, I'll leave them to make their own statements. However, I will point out that most of the users who are getting 40% failures are Google users.
Hmm.
And I think Google knows that.
Now, but how do we solve that? Is that an education problem, or is that a market approach problem?
Every education, whenever you try to educate the customers, that's an indication of a basic failing. That's not the customer's failing.
Mm-hmm.
Customers should not need to be educated to use your product.
But everything can't be intuitive, Peter.
Well, you know, we always said that before about everything from cars to computers.
Yeah.
And computers are not very intuitive yet, but they're much more so than they used to be.
Right.
And cars are getting pretty darn intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
Even I can drive.
Right.
And most things are getting better and better. Even VCRs are beginning to approach usable.
Maybe I could actually program one.
Does a light flash on yours at 12 o'clock every day?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah.
All the time, yeah. Most people does. So things are getting better from that perspective. And I think web search has got the ability to be much better. For instance, there's three small companies, and here you are with a small company trying hard to use some of that at 40%. Three small companies are working on different techniques to make the answers come up much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So you just click once or twice and bing, go, there is the answer to the question.
Ah.
As opposed to searching out through several pages.
So what you're saying, it sounds like you're saying almost that Google, you know, part of Google's success has been the simplicity of their page.
Very
and their homepage is totally, I mean, it's major white space,
yeah.
Right? So what you're saying is their homepage was so simple, it wasn't cluttered with a bunch of other information that almost could have used some of that space for a little bit of information.
Maybe, but you know, if you look at the way that say Babylon works, or some of the other products like that, what you'll find is that they don't even have a homepage.
Mm.
So, for instance, if you want to use Babylon, or if you want to use some of the products that are like that, like GuruNet, you simply click on the word. So if you want to find more about Blasting Game, you click on Blasting Game. I'll tell you more about that after the break.
Yeah, let's do that. The main thing, folks, is that Peter says if you've got to educate your customer, maybe you've got a problem with your product. That's a very important point that I think we all need to take away from this, if nothing else. Tin Till will be right back with Peter Meyer, the author of Creating and Dominating New Markets. Stay with us.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on?
We're back at 7 till. Peter Meyer is our guest and our good friend. He's the author of Warp Speed Growth and Creating and Dominating New Markets and a number of other books. Meyer is how you spell his name if you're looking for him at the bookstore or if you're looking for him online. And also at his website. Peter, why don't you give us that, please?
Well, the best way to go with that would be to creatinganddominatingnewmarkets.com.
Creatinganddominatingnewmarkets.com. And they can find out more about your books as well as they can find information on what we're talking about right now. Is the research that you did that we're talking about right now, is that available yet?
No, it's not. This is the first place we've announced it. We haven't published it yet.
Right.
We'll be publishing it probably on the website within 2 weeks, and then it'll go out as some articles to the media.
Great.
So this is the first time anybody's heard it.
So give us a snapshot of the research. Remind us of what you told us earlier in the hour.
What we decided to do is take a look at how web searches work, and we asked several hundred professionals, people in business or in state and local governments, how they use the search engines and whether they were successful or not. We asked for information on the last three searches that everybody had done. And we discovered that, to my surprise, that about 40% of all the web searches fail. And we asked people in technology and out of technology. We asked people who are executives and non-executives. And we discovered that people in technology, for instance, do a little better, but only by a few points.
Mm-hmm.
Even people who are familiar with the technology behind all this are not getting much more than about 68%.
In other words, the people who sort of understand the way the search engine thinks.
You would think so.
Yeah.
So apparently that is an assumption on my part that did not work out.
So in our own businesses, we need to find out how often when our customers approach us, if they call us, if they walk in the building, if they go to our website, if we reach out and touch them, we need to find out what percentage of the time that they're being successful with us, don't we?
We do. We need to constantly contact our customers and ask them whether or not they're getting the results enough of the time to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer here is I think that our 40% gap between success and failure is a large enough gap.
That's
for
a big number.
New companies.
That you could move a couple or three companies in there, couldn't you?
You could indeed, and there are several companies who are trying to get in there now.
Mm-hmm. The main story here, folks, is that something's... Somebody's going to find out what that number is, right, Peter? I mean, it can either be you, if you're the big dog, it could either be you and you fix it, or it can be you and you lose market share, or if you're the upstart, then you can, if you find out that competitor is weak, then you can move in, and that's one of the things you talk about, Peter, in your book, Creating and Dominating New Markets.
Mm-hmm. If you find that there's a gap that nobody's fulfilling, that gap in potential is worth looking at.
Right.
And if it's something you can help with, then that's a consideration.
Right.
We discover that there's never a limit to potential. Always gaps. Always things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Always new markets.
All right. What's left to be said on this topic? We've got a couple of minutes left.
I think people may be asking what tools they can use instead of Google to get more precise. And I'll tell them that two tools that I personally used during the survey were GuruNet, which is available at GuruNet.
GuruNet. GuruNet.
.com. They can get there.
Okay.
And Babylon, which is like the biblical term, at Babylon.com. And both these tools were much more precise at pulling up information, but not 100%. Far from it. But a different model, much better model, one that, as I was saying, doesn't require a home screen at all. You click on the word, and they'll do the research for you.
Uh-huh.
That's a nice way of doing it. So these are tools that you can get today. And I think that the lesson isn't which tool you use, but the lesson is that people have to find better tools. If your product is good, but people have to find better tools to use your product, that's an opportunity for somebody else to come take your market away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you always have to pay attention. You're either on the offense or defense, right? And if you're on the offense, you know, that's exciting. But if you're on the defense, it can be a little scary, right?
Well, I think the best way to look at this is that if you're doing fine now, the market's going to change. Keep in touch with the market, make lots of small changes with the market, and you'll do even better. If you don't keep in touch with the market, then you may discover they've gone somewhere else without you.
The days of being able to rest on your laurels, I mean, you can rest on your laurels maybe like 15 seconds. What do you think? Can we give them that much, Peter?
Look at it this way. When you're driving, it would be much more efficient if all you had to do was look at the road every 15 seconds, and you
right.
could do paperwork and emails
right.
and stuff in between. How well would that work?
Yeah.
You need to be constantly in touch, second by second in touch with the markets and where your road's going.
Right. Well said, Peter. And thank you for the good job today. And we'll get you back on again real soon. Thanks for introducing that research to us today.
Pleasure. Thank
First
you very much.
First time ever. Thank you. Peter Meyer, ladies and gentlemen, creatinganddominatingnewmarkets.com. Check it out when you get a chance. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.